Time to run.
The Extra Mile Podcast, Galloway Edition. Galloway Edition Extra Mile Podcast is a podcast for runners of all abilities who want to learn everything they can about the Galloway Run Walk Run training method, right from Jeff himself. This podcast will run walk you right through Jeff's 30-week marathon training schedule and gently get you to the finish line of your full marathon injury-free.
Hello. And welcome to episode 7 of the Extra Mile Podcast, Galloway Edition. This is your host, Kevin, and I'm a little behind my time. A little tardy with when I had expected to put this episode out, for which I apologize. This whole day job thing has really thrown a monkey wrench into my life. But anyway, here we are, and I hope that the wait will have been worth it, because I'm rather excited about this episode today. Let's see, episode 7. We're going to cover with Jeff today weeks 19, 20, 21, and 22 of the To Finish program from the Marathon Trainings book. And within that time frame, we'll have a long run of 20 miles and 2 magic miles. It'll be our 5th and 6th magic mile. I should look ahead and see how many. 6 might be the last magic mile we're gonna do. I'm out today on an extremely hot day. The heat index is actually above 100 today, which begs the question, and if I think about it, I'm going to ask Jeff this: at what point is it too dangerous to actually go outside and run? I've made some modifications today. I'm carrying water. Normally I'd run 6.5 to 7.5 today. If I get anywhere close to 5, I'll be a happy camper. And as you will hear from my gym boss, interval timer, I have backed it down to a 2-1. Probably should move it to a 1-1 or a 30-30 as well. Maybe I'll ask Jeff that. I look at this run as my punishment for not getting up early this morning and at least beating the sun. That'll learn me, huh? I did 10 episodes of the Extra Mile Podcast experiment last year, where I interviewed Jeff, much like this current podcast. And today will be my 7th interview with Jeff. I've also had some pretty long discussions in person and a couple of meet and greets with Jeff. And my point is, I have enjoyed every single topic we have spoken about. But I have to admit that what we're going to talk about in today's episode, actually in the next 2 episodes, but I am digressing and maybe foreshadowing. The topic we'll discuss today is by far my favorite topic to talk to Jeff about. I started digging into this Galloway thing a couple of years ago with the thought of finishing a marathon with a smile on my face, upright, and just having a great time. Although it took me a while, I did accomplish that. But along the way, I think that I have stumbled onto something far more important than finishing a marathon. Something that makes finishing a marathon pale in comparison. Something that in my mind, needs a little bit more attention and deserves a little more time than our normal podcast. Something that could at most extend your life by a considerable number of years, and at the very least could increase the quality of your life for however long you've got left. So, instead of putting together a 3-hour podcast, for which I would be justifiably chastised at the Facebook and Twitter locations of our site. In fact, I put together a 2-hour one, I think, for the experiment. You would have thought that I stepped on somebody's baby bunny. Anyway, so instead of putting together a 3-hour podcast, what I've decided to do is put together episode 7A and 7B. Sound familiar, huh? So let me start over again, huh? Hello and welcome to episode 7A of the Extra Mile Podcast Galloway Edition. How's that? Better? So if we are all going to end up at the same place after episode 7A and B, then I think at a minimum we all have to start at the same place. So the question becomes, where do we start? Let me ask you this simple question. What if I were to tell you that by making 4 voluntary lifestyle changes, you could reduce your chances of developing type 2 diabetes by 92%? That's a 9 and a 2. What about reducing heart disease by 81%? Stroke by 50%? And cancer by 30%? And what if I were to tell you that those estimates might be conservative? This is not my opinion. This is the result of many scientific studies. Studies that have been replicated time and time again over the past several years. I've been doing the Extra Mile podcast now for more than 4 years, but I've been listening to running and health-related podcasts for about 6. One of the podcasts that was always my favorite was back in the day a podcast entitled Fitness Rocks. Fitness Rocks was a podcast put together by Dr. Monty Ladner. And Dr. Monty had an incredible talent for taking the medical issues as well as different publications of the day and translating them into English. Dr. Monty published an episode of Fitness Rocks back on October the 2nd of 2009, in which he interviewed Dr. David Katz and discussed a study that had been published in the Archives of Internal Medicine that was titled Healthy Living is the Best Revenge. I never forgot that episode. And when this topic arose during my discussions with Jeff, I reached out to Dr. Monty and asked him about this episode. And although Fitness Rocks is no longer available, he was kind enough to send me that episode and gave me permission to cut and paste pieces of it into this podcast. By the way, he also gave me permission to publish the entire podcast for a period of time so that you all could download it and listen to the uncut version, which I beg you to do. And I'll put that link in the show notes today over at our website. So in an effort to make sure we all are at the same starting point before we begin, I'm going to put together a montage of that episode of Fitness Rocks before we talk to Jeff today. You'll hear Dr. Katz and Dr. Monty discuss in detail those 4 lifestyle changes. And in the way of a spoiler alert, I'll tell you that one of those lifestyle changes is to exercise. beginning to see a common denominator here. We will then talk to Jeff, not just about the training program, but get Jeff's thoughts on how to use run, walk, run to run until you're 100. Really good stuff, so let's get to it. We will chat again at the end, and we've got some important stuff to talk about at the end of the show. So hang around and enjoy your extra mile.
You're listening to Fitness Rocks.
Fitness Rocks, podcast 145, Tuesday, October 20th, 2009. I'm Dr. Monty, and this week on Fitness Rocks, I want to begin talking about something that has bothered me for a long time. Why don't we humans make better decisions? In our modern world, we are surrounded by looming calamities that we know a lot about and that we can prevent in many cases. But we aren't taking the proactive steps that science is revealing to us. And we have science that tells us how to solve all of those calamities. And as far as I can tell, we are pretty much thumbing our nose at science and ignoring what we know to be the solutions to these really big problems. In the August 10th, 2009 issue of the Archives of Internal Medicine, there was an article entitled, "Healthy Living is the Best Revenge." The article is another in a long line of medical research papers demonstrating the profound impact of lifestyle on our health. The authors looked at how the four healthy lifestyle habits that I have come to call the magic formula affect a person's risk for developing one of the major chronic diseases. The four healthy lifestyle habits, just as a review, are number one, not smoking, number two, eating a diet high in fruits and vegetables, number three, exercising at least 30 minutes a day, number four, maintaining a body mass index less than 30. The researchers found that people in their study, and they looked at over 23,000 people, people in their study who adhered to all four of the healthy lifestyle habits simultaneously had an 80% reduction in the risk of developing a major chronic disease. 80% reduction. There is nothing in modern medicine, nothing, no pill, no surgery, nothing that comes anywhere close to that rate of effectiveness. And there is certainly nothing in the realm of dietary supplements or other fads that come anywhere close to that kind of effectiveness. The breakdown was a 93% reduction in the risk of type 2 diabetes, an 81% reduction in the risk of coronary heart disease, a 50% reduction in the risk of stroke, and a 36% reduction in the risk of cancer. What intrigued me about this study is that nothing in it is new. We've known this for a couple of decades, and that is what makes it such a special paper. Because now we have a plethora of medical studies from researchers around the world on different populations of people showing almost exactly the same numbers every single time. In other words, this research data that I just gave you, these statistics on how much the impact is with regards to reducing the risk of these chronic diseases, this data has passed the test of reproducibility multiple times. And here's something else about the study that also has come out the same way in multiple studies. Practically nobody is living this lifestyle. Only 9% of the people in this study lived a lifestyle characterized by all four healthy habits. In the same issue of the Archives of Internal Medicine, August 10th, 2009, there was an invited editorial that accompanied the article. And the editorial was by Dr. David Katz of Yale Medical School. And he argued in his editorial that this well-established knowledge about the impact of lifestyle on health is not power, making a play on the old saying that knowledge is power. And what he meant is that the problem we face today is not a lack of appreciation for the power of healthy lifestyles to reverse the epidemics of obesity and chronic diseases. The problem that we have is getting people to make healthy lifestyle choices. I had a chance to talk to Dr. Katz about his editorial earlier this week. Dr. Katz is a remarkable physician who has published extensively on the topic of nutrition and health. He has written several books for the general public and for practicing clinicians. One of his most popular books for the public is entitled The Way to Eat, A Six-Step Path to Lifelong Weight Control. Dr. Katz was nominated in 2009 to be the U.S. Surgeon General. He's board certified in internal medicine and preventive medicine and public health. I encourage you to visit Dr. Katz's website at www.davidkatzmd.com. Here's my interview with Dr. Katz. Dr. Katz, welcome to Fitness Rocks.
Thanks, Monty. Great to be with you.
Listen, you wrote an excellent editorial in the Archives of Internal Medicine, the August 10th, 2009 issue, which was an invited editorial or a comment of another article that appeared in the same issue, which was entitled Healthy Living is the Best Revenge, something like that.
Right.
And the authors of that article, I think for the benefit of the listeners, it would be useful for me to just briefly review that study. Or maybe it would be better if you did that.
Sure, I'd be happy to, but thanks for the kind words, Monty. So Earl Ford and colleagues at the Centers for Disease Control tapped into a large ongoing study of adults in a number of European countries, and they looked at a group of over 23,000 adults in and around Potsdam, Germany. And in essence, for simplicity's sake, we can say that the investigators asked the participants in this trial about four behaviors. They asked them, do you smoke, yes or no? Are you physically active, yes or no? Do you eat a healthy diet, yes or no? And are you controlling your weight, yes or no? And it really was that simple. So healthy eating was just habitual intake of fruits, vegetables, and whole grains. Physical activity was simply, I am active most days versus I'm not. Really, you know, crude measures of four behaviors. And in fact, I would argue there really were only three behaviors, because weight is not a behavior. Weight is a byproduct of behaviors, namely eating and physical activity. So in essence, three behaviors. And then they looked at variation in health outcomes in the group in association with these behaviors. And here's what they found, and it really was nothing short of stunning, or at least it would have been stunning if we hadn't already known this. For people who said, I'm doing everything right, I don't smoke, I eat well, I'm physically active, and by the way, my weight is under control, as compared to people who weren't doing anything right, I do smoke, I don't eat well, I'm not active, and my weight is out of control, the difference in the risk of any major chronic disease or dying young was 80%. In other words, simply by putting our feet, our forks, and our fingers to better use, any one of us has the potential to reduce our risk of all the dread chronic diseases, heart disease, diabetes, cancer, stroke, or dying prematurely of any cause by 80%. There has never been a breakthrough in all of medical history to rival that. So in essence, that's what they found.
What's the most remarkable about that study, which is a point that you touched on, is that this is not new information. And the people who listen to this podcast will know that for the last 3 years, I have been inundating them with countless studies that have shown exactly that. And what's so impressive to me is the consistency of numbers in these studies across different populations, different investigators, different countries where the studies are being done. And those numbers are as follows. And if I get them wrong, you please correct me. But lifestyle changes, the very four that you mentioned, could be capable of preventing as much as 90% of all cases of type 2 diabetes, about 80% of all cases of coronary artery disease, and about a third of all cancers. And these numbers have consistently shown up in studies like this one across the board for the past couple of decades. So to me, it makes it unquestionable the role of lifestyle. And the other thing that's interesting to me is that you are one of a number of people I've interviewed on this show who have said that we have nothing else in modern medicine that is even close to this kind of effectiveness for prevention of chronic diseases.
Exactly. Well, first of all, Monty, I agree with those numbers, and there's wide agreement among experts in preventive medicine. If anything, the cancer number may be a little bit higher. We may be able to prevent not just a third of cancers with lifestyle, maybe even two-thirds. And then stroke, if we add that to the list, we certainly can prevent 50% of all strokes, maybe more. And it's absolutely true. There is nothing that biomedical advance has ever produced to rival the power of lifestyle over health. And so the point that I try to make every chance I get, and it sounds like you and I are fellow crusaders on the same mission.
So the evidence just continues to build, and that brings me to my next point, which is that the other set of studies in which the numbers have been consistent are those studies that look at how many people are living a healthy lifestyle.
I think the real takeaway message here is that knowledge isn't power. We say knowledge is power. I think knowledge is necessary for power, but clearly it's insufficient. We have a knowledge of the lifestyle elements that would dramatically change our fate, improve our quality of life, advance the human condition. We're not putting it to use. So there's obviously some gap between what we know and what we do. In this case, knowledge isn't power. And so the critical question has to be, why? Why in this case is knowledge not power? And although the answer is not simple, because there are many elements to it, I think if we kind of step back from altitude, the answer simply is the modern world. If we know we're supposed to eat foods direct from nature, as Michael Pollan says, eat food, not too much, mostly plants, but we have a food supply where overwhelmingly things are presented to us in bags, boxes, bottles, jars, cans, and styrofoam, and they're highly processed, well, then the environment is not consistent with what we know to promote health. If we talk about the value of physical activity, and you were just describing how physical activity all by itself has a favorable influence on our genes and the structure of our DNA and our chromosomes, but we then create an environment where labor-saving technology does everything that muscles used to do, and people have crazy, hectic schedules that leave no time for physical activity, neither before, after, or during the workday, once again, we have an environment that's completely at odds with the knowledge and the messaging about health. Fundamentally, Monty, I tend to put it this way. Throughout most of human history, calories were relatively scarce and hard to get, and physical activity was unavoidable. We have devised a modern world where physical activity is scarce and hard to get, and calories are unavoidable. But the good news is we are smarter than the average bear. We can outthink this problem, and it begins by opening our eyes and seeing it. And I think, frankly, we're trying to advance that cause by having this conversation. You know, really just tell it like it is. We eat too much of all the wrong things. Frankly, if it glows in the dark, you really should not eat it. Step away from the box and nobody will get hurt. Physical activity is a good thing. We have a native animal vitality. It is a pleasure to take advantage of it. It is a tragic waste to squander it. We need to start thinking that way. The stairs are your friend. The elevator is your ticket to reduced health. The other thing that I would throw in here, because we really do need to get traction, we need to get it now, because this is a time of crisis. The chronic disease burden is unsustainable. And I often find that people who are willing to shrug off a threat to themselves are unwilling to shrug off a threat to their children. So one of the things to throw into the mix here, Monty, the paper that I reviewed for the archives was about adults. And so my commentary in that particular piece was largely about adults. But we have to concede that type 2 diabetes was called adult-onset diabetes less than a generation ago, and it's now rampant in kids, and it's occurring at every younger age. and it is a harbinger of heart disease. If 7- and 8-year-olds can get adult-onset diabetes, 17- and 18-year-olds can start having heart attacks. So we really have a generation of children in peril. And a nation of adults who are parents, grandparents, aunts, and uncles, people concerned with the well-being of children, may not be willing to tolerate that. And so, you know, whether it's getting people to understand the importance of evolutionary biology to explain why we're in the predicament we're in, or finding a way to tug on people's heartstrings and say there is a clear and present danger to your children, and you must take action. And, you know, frankly, I think we need to get there any which way we can. Part of it is educating people to better understand the origins of the problem. Part of it is simply making people aware of the acuity of the problem. For those interested in more of my thoughts on these topics, and again, they're clearly very confluent with yours, I have a website, davidkatzmd.com, and I think if enough of us keep at this, we can turn the tide, but we can't rest anytime soon.
And once again, let's head over to the Extra Mile Podcast Galloway Edition Hotline with our very special guest, Jeff Galloway. Hello, Jeff.
Well, hey, Kevin. It's a nice summer time period, isn't it?
Absolutely. And listen, before we get started, we spoke about 3 weeks ago, and if I'm not mistaken, somebody had a big day between 3 weeks ago and today, right?
That is correct.
What happened? What was this big day?
Well, it was a birthday, among other things.
Yeah, and, you gonna give a number, or you hiding that?
Oh, I'll be glad to give a number. The number is 66 at this point, because of the way I feel and everything. It is simply a number.
Sure.
Proud to say that there's not any aches and pains, or I haven't had an injury in over 32 years. So running's good, life is good, and the birthdays just go rolling by, so it's wonderful to be able to do that. I will say that I am so blessed to be able to be with runner friends at almost every weekend of the year, and this was the same type of thing. This my birthday at Missoula. I went to the Missoula Marathon.
Yeah.
But Barbara and I snuck away to Glacier National Park, had a wonderful hike on my birthday, and a beautiful tour of Glacier Park, which is phenomenal.
Well, you're doing something right. Happy belated birthday from everybody here.
Thank you.
Well, listen, I'm suffering through 100-plus heat index temperatures. I think it was 104 out there when I came down here to call you and talk with you. 104 heat index. There's not a cloud in the sky. The sun is beating down. So I guess my important question is, would you like to trade spots with me today?
No, Kevin. I have endured that type of temperature before in Florida and in other desert regions where I've been, Philippines also. And I will tell you, it's tough to have to be out here in the Lake Tahoe area where the highs are about 78 degrees and the humidity is 10%. But, you know, somebody has to do it.
Well, listen, I know you're there with a group of people. You pass my offer around. If anybody seems to raise their hand, you grab them right away and call me, will you?
Well, I sure will. And the neat thing about coming out here each year, this is a little secret in that we do not advertise this, but we welcome anyone who would like to come to our July retreat. It's in the middle of July every year, and we've done this since 1975. But it's just a warm group of people, beautiful trails, great weather, hadn't rained in over 17 years. It's just wonderful, neat.
Nice. Well, and after you leave that gorgeous spot, I know next month you've got another retreat, I think, down in Florida, right?
That's correct. We have filled that one up already, but we do have ones in September and October, which we're looking forward to down at the beach.
Nice. I'll make sure to put a link in the show notes for today's over at the website where they can get some more information about all the Galloway retreats.
Great.
I also see on your busy, busy calendar, you've got something coming up called the Big Wildlife Marathon. What's that deal?
Yes. It used to be called Humphrey's Marathon, sponsored by a restaurant up there. Now, Humphrey's is a spot. sponsor of one of the events, and they have quite a few events, 5K, 10K, half, full, and events for kids. It's in Anchorage, Alaska, and we were up there last year. The temperature at the start, 52 degrees. The temperature at the finish, 52 degrees. It was great. You don't find many marathons this time of year where you can expect to get cool weather, but Anchorage is one of them.
Is it relatively flat? Is it hilly? What's the course like?
Well, it has some hills on it. It most of it's flat. It's on a bike pedestrian trail, hugs the coast for a lot of it, goes inland at one point. But there are a few places where you have some rises and so forth. They're totally doable, so I'm not going to lie to you and say that it's a flat course. But it a lot of people ran PRs last year or close to it. Very nice, well-run event.
I noticed that for anybody who's happening to either think about that, get into one of those series of races, or is in the area, you're putting on a clinic on Saturday, August the 20th, I should say, at 9 o'clock in the morning there.
Yes.
As well. So,
a lot of people now, particularly during the last year, have flown in some cases, 1,000 miles or so, just to go to my running school that I give in these locations, and I'm very honored by that. The point is that there isn't a lot of information around about how to solve running problems, and people are seeking me out, and I really look forward to that. So it's going to be a fun time up in Alaska, and I look forward to seeing those who are coming in from the Anchorage area and also from other areas.
Well, I'll put something in the show notes, a link for some information on that one. Once again, it's on Saturday, August the 20th from 9 o'clock in the morning to noon. And I'll bet you're going to hang around after that and answer others. I'll bet you don't walk out of there at noon, do you?
No, and during the session, we regularly pause for individual questions all the way through. So it's a very, my running schools as well as my retreats are a chance for people to have individual attention on whatever area they want.
As well as the all-important photo op, too.
Well, you're darn right. I mean, there is Facebook.
There you go. That's right. Well, let's get into the episode today of the Extra Mile Podcast Galloway Edition. We're already up to episode 7, and we're going to cover weeks 19 through 22. And within that time period, we've got a 20-miler, and we've also got our 5th and 6th Magic Mile. And so when I look at that time period, there's actually a couple things that that jump out at me. Number one, that the 6th Magic Mile is the last one of this program.
Yes.
So now we've got 6 of them, and I'm assuming we can take that data and pretty much put our plan together, I think, for the big day, you think?
That is correct.
I think next episode we'll talk about exactly how to do that, what data we should take, how to look at it, and then be pretty specific about what we're going to look at for the big day. Also, after this 20-miler, there's only 2 long runs left. So I think these long runs are very, very important, are they not?
Oh, they're crucial. They are the essence of the marathon training program. And a half marathon, the long runs are the essence of that one, too. Even for those who want to run faster, the length of the long run is the single greatest enhancement component in training. It will improve your time better than any other single component, including speed work, according to numerous surveys that I have done over the years. And let me just interject that if people are behind the schedule of long runs, it is still possible to catch up. And the way that you catch up is to walk the portion of that long run that you have not done before. Let's say that the schedule says you should be at 20, but you have only run 13 miles. So you walk for 7 miles gently, And then in the last 13 miles of that, you would drop down to a more liberal run-walk-run ratio. Let's say that you were doing a 2-1, you'd either drop down to 1-1 or 30-30. And if you need to drop down more than that, go ahead. But in that one episode of walking and then doing run-walk for the rest, the endurance will be achieved and set you right back on the endurance schedule towards your marathon.
So then, assuming, in your example, assuming we do that, we walk seven and then do our other, we just jump right back in the program 3 weeks later and do our 23?
That is correct.
And run the whole thing?
Well, you
run,
have the option of run-walking it at whatever is a realistic ratio, or you could walk the first portion of that next long run just to be sure. You'll still get the same endurance out of it, and some people like to have a little safety valve, a little shock absorber, and the walk at the beginning definitely does that, as well as help the body warm up.
During this program, we highlighted building some strength in our legs with hill training. Is it so close to the end now that we're probably not going to build any more strength? Can we stop, or should we stop, or is there risk to that, or should we just keep on doing our hill training?
The course that you'll be running in the marathon is not hilly, it doesn't have any hills, a dead flat course, then there's really no benefit at this point in continuing with the hill training. But if there are hills on the course, it is still a good idea one day a week to run hills that, as best you can tell, are somewhat similar to the hills on the marathon course, just once a week. You don't have to run them hard. It wouldn't hurt to run at what you think is going to be your race pace. But even if you jog them, it's best to have some up and down adaptation work that you'll do between now and the marathon itself, just one day a week.
Gotcha. Well, we are really getting close now, and I'm sure people are starting to get, you know, pretty excited. I'm sure they've made, if they're going out of town, made some plans, some hotel reservations, and so we are close enough now. I think it's important to start talking about taking a mental tour and doing some sort of rehearsal that you've talked about at length in the training program's book. So can you tell us a little bit about what the race rehearsal is and why it's important, how we do it, that kind of?
Absolutely. The race rehearsal is valuable for two groups of people primarily. Those who have time goals, and of course, we're really not covering time goal folks in this podcast. The time goal folks have a different set of workouts, including
exactly
1 mile repeats and so forth. But there is this reality issue of course closing time. And
yeah,
particularly those who are running a marathon for the first time need to be aware of that time that they're going to shut down the finish line, and that is posted on practically every single race website that I've seen. They want to make sure you know that, but seek it out and find out what that is. And then, once you know that time, you want to have a run one day a week that is done at that pace, doing walk breaks that are appropriate for that pace. Let's just say that the closing time is 6:30, which is about 14:30 per mile. I don't have my calculator now, but let's just say that it's 14 minutes per mile.
Okay.
Then you would go out on a Tuesday after you warm up with a gentle 5 to 10 minutes, and then do another 5 to 10 minutes of a few little acceleration gliders gently. Then get into 3 to 4 miles, run, in this case, at 14 minutes per mile. And 14 minutes indicates either a 30-30, 30 seconds run, 30 seconds walk,
right,
or a 20-second run and a 40-second walk. And so you practice that, and it's always a good idea to try a few other strategies of run-walk-run. In that 14-minute range, for example, some do 20-20, or a few do even 15-15, And occasionally people like the 1-in-1 better. But in most cases, when people have tried 1-in-1 or 30-30, they tend to run a little faster with 30-30 and also recover faster.
Okay. What kind of mental rehearsals or do we? I mean, talk about the mental tour of the course itself. Maybe the morning of, and I mean, we go through all that in our head a few times, huh?
Well, it's actually, thanks for bringing that up, because actually it's best to start that during your last two to three long runs, in which during the long run, hopefully you've done a little preview on the website of the race as to what the course is like, or the best scenario, it's in your hometown and you've driven over or run portions of the course, so you know what the course is like. But in any case, try to get some type of a preview of what the course is like. And then while you're running the long runs, imagine the various segments that might be challenging to you. Also, do a quick mental tour of the course as a whole during the first 4 to 5 miles. It passes the time as well as prepares you mentally for what's coming up, and you can get some very good work done mentally to figure out and anticipate the next challenge that comes on course. It may be an uphill. For some, it's a downhill. For some, it's maybe a stretch where there aren't a lot of people on the course. Another great resource to tell you about the course and what to expect is marathonguide.com. They have runner reviews there, so pull up the race you're going to do and read those runner reviews. They tend to give a very accurate assessment of what goes on and can tell you about the various segments of the course.
Super. And maybe in the next episode, or maybe the one after that, we'll get into more specifics of what to do the night before, the day before the race, the night before the race, and as well as the morning of, and maybe go over some important checklists.
Well, we'll get specific there, and of course, a lot of the listeners have a copy of my Galloway Training Programs book that has that chapter in it, and or the Marathon You Can Do It book that all of these we have on our website. But the point is that if you will read those chapters in advance of our podcast, you're going to get even more out of the podcast, and it'll really help you. And you can even send some questions to us in advance if you don't understand something that we might be able to handle during the podcast itself.
Great idea, Jeff. And the information you just spoke about is it starts on page 103 of the training programs book. So there you got some homework from Jeff Galloway. So
absolutely. Now we're not going to have a pop quiz, but we will go into those.
He's going to check for your homework, though.
That's true, unless the dog ate it.
There you go. Just a quick reminder that we're speaking with Jeff Galloway, running distance expert and author of the Galloway Run, Walk, Run Training Program Method. All right, so let's get into, let's shift gears a little bit. And I want to spend a little bit of time today talking about what I think you've told me in the past was your favorite book, Running Until You're 100.
Correct. That is my goal, Kevin. And if it's not my favorite book, it certainly is my favorite goal, because I do have several favorite books.
Yeah. However, they're all your babies, aren't they?
They are. They are. I mean, they really are like children. They're different.
Sure.
But in this book, you have a blueprint both for training and eating. And the whole concept of being able to run until you're 100 is a state of mind. Because if you're able to run when you're in your 90s, you're not just talking about living out a certain number of years, like punching the clock type of thing.
Sure.
You've got quality in your life, and it really is a symbol as well as a vitality producer to be able to continue running in some form, and that is only one of the areas that we get into in the Running Until 100 book.
I've said this before, and I know you and I have spoken about it, but Running Until You're 100, it was actually like what I call one of my biggest aha moments, that I start out to do something obvious that's huge, and that is to finish a marathon. I don't want to discount that event because that's huge. But at some point while I'm reading, I start figuring out this running to your 100 part of it and using run, walk, run makes, you know, finishing a marathon, it kind of pales in comparison to that.
Yes.
That's like the marathon, I think, is the icing, of course, but the real cake is this. Did you have some sort of aha moment yourself that prompted you to write this book, or along, I mean, I'm assuming you actually started run, walk, run to finish a marathon, or at least to help people finish a marathon, or is it backwards?
Actually, that's a very good question, because the reason that I wrote the book was I had been asked by a number of people at clinics and folks that emailed me questions, why wasn't there a book, a good book that had my concepts on running as you get older? And I pitched this to my publisher, who thought that it was a fantastic idea. And he said, well, what are you going to call it? And the first title, the working title I had, was not well received by anybody. It was called The Mature Runner's Handbook, and that bombed because it really didn't tell the whole prospect and hope and so forth that we have for our running careers. So after I brainstormed with a lot of runners, the Running Till 100 became a goal that really epitomizes the search for quality of life as you get older. And it's very well documented that it's not just in the physical side, the cardiovascular side. It's in the mind, that the mind stays more active and it works quicker, and you actually have new brain cell growth as you get older if you will train it. And running is one of the very best ways to be in the executive frontal lobe, the conscious brain, so that you can be in the moment.
Well, and I know you just got done telling us that your books are like your children, and I don't want to put you on the spot, but do you remember, this book gripped me from the very, even before I started, it actually was the dedication. Do you remember who you dedicated this book to and why?
That, you know, it's my mom, and I have to tell you, my mom was so dear to me my whole life, and she was a very quiet person but very determined, and I owe so much of what I have become to her, and I dedicated it to her based on one particular episode when she was 82 years old, and she was entered in the Peachtree Road Race, but then was diagnosed with lung cancer, inoperable lung cancer. And I kept telling her, you know, that's a 10K on July 4th. I said, Mom, I wouldn't even recommend that you try that. And she wouldn't argue with me. And she would just say something like, well, let's wait and see. So I won't give away the story, but a lot of people have told me that story has inspired them so much in periods of duress or whatever. But let me tell you, Kitty Galloway still is alive and well in me and a lot of people that she met. And I just wanted to give her some thanks for everything that she has done for me.
Well, good for you, Jeff. That's an amazing dedication to that book. So worth paying to buy the book just for the dedication. And if that's not enough, we're going to talk about a significant discount here in a few minutes anyway.
Absolutely.
All right. So this all sounds like a lot of fun. But tell me, running to your 100, is that even a good idea, Jeff? I know that you talked about the endorphins and helping your brain. What about our knees, our joints, and things like that?
Well, that was the first area of research that I wanted to get into, because over the years of my running, I had heard from quite a few people, some experts in the field of orthopedics, who told me that running, it was just an opinionated statement, something like running's going to damage your joints. You keep running, you're just going to have a continuing series of problems as you get older. So I went to some friends of mine who had connections with the CDC in Atlanta in the area of gerontology and exercise. And basically, identified quite a few studies in that related running to joint health, orthopedic health in general, and a lot of other aspects of quality of life as you get older. And interestingly enough, couldn't find a single study anywhere, nor could my consultants, that showed that running harms your joints. This opinion that running is going to harm your joints is not backed up by research. On the other hand, we found quite a few studies now that show that runners have much healthier joints than non-runners as the decades go by. One study out of Stanford, I don't know how many thousands of runners over 50 in the study, but it's been these are runners over 50 that had been running for more than 20 years. That group had less than 25% of the orthopedic complaints compared with those who don't run their own age. And there are numerous other studies showing essentially the same thing. So if you want to keep your joints active and keep them adapting, they will tend to do that if you have regular exercise that doesn't harm them. The deal killer seems to be speed work, running races too often, or doing having a long stride. So the key elements that keep people healthy are short stride, having a day off between runs as you get older, and then having enough walk breaks in there so that you don't continuously overuse any of your weak links.
So in a nutshell, those are the kind of adaptations we need to make to the run, walk, run, specifically to the program that we've been talking about here. It's in episode 7 now. We've all got a pretty good idea, I hope, what this run, walk, run program is, at least to finish a marathon. But specifically, the kinds of changes we need to make as we age are just what you just what you spoke about. Is there anything else?
Well, I was just talking to a runner this morning who thought that he was going to have to give up running, and in fact he did. He gave up running for 10 years. In his late 50s, he was having a number of orthopedic problems, and so he'd been told, hey, you can't run. I mean, that's just going to harm you. And then after 10 years of not running, he ran into some friends that were using my run, walk, run method, and he started reading the Getting Started book, and he said, you know, he really missed the psychological boost that he used to get from running and the vitality lift that he had the rest of the day. And so he gave it a try. He got my Getting Started book, and he got out there, and he just ran for 10 seconds and walked for 50 seconds at first. And he gradually progressed, and I think now he is somewhere between 20-20 and 30-30, but he's 72 years old. He loves running. He feels as good as he has. And he's not having the orthopedic complaints that he used to have. The experts, and this is identified in the book, show through their work that the body is designed to continuously adapt, even as we get to advanced age, if we give the body enough rest between any stresses that we put on it. And we minimize those stresses. So regularity of exercise is the key, and staying gentle with the exercise, and that's what run, walk, run does.
So he's 72 years old and back doing something that he loves, and he's in Lake Tahoe with Jeff Galloway on a retreat.
Absolutely, and with a smile on his face, too.
God love him. God love him.
And the thing that I have learned in working now with numerous runners over the age of 70 and even a number now over the age of 80, the 80-year-old group, percentage-wise, is the fastest-growing group in running, and it's really exciting to see that. But what I've learned is that you need to do the run, walk, run that works for you. Even though I do have very good suggestions based on a fairly large database as to how you would change the run, walk, run with decades of age.
Right.
The bottom line each day is if you don't feel good at that ratio, then put in more walking. And then your body and mind is probably going to feel better, and you'll be able to do your workout and feel better afterwards.
Great. Well, listen, I love this book. This is, I want to say, four or five of your books so far that I've read, and this is number one with me. Can we Can we give some discounts on this book?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
20 is a good number. It's a nice round number. How about 20%?
20%, you got it.
With an autograph.
With an autograph, yes.
All right. So I will put a link in the show notes over to jeffgalloway.com. I will link it right to this book. And at checkout, if you will simply type in extra mile five, no spaces, and the number five at the end, Jeff's website will automatically give you that 20% discount and see that it's autographed and shipped out. So awesome. Thank you very much for that discussion, Jeff.
Well, I'll tell you, I am behind everyone who wants to continue until they're 100, but I have to give the full disclaimer now, Kevin, and that is after you get to 100, you're on your own.
You know, it's funny you say that because I'm in the next episode, I've got an interview I'm going to talk about here in a minute with an author of a book who says you need to exercise every single day in some form or fashion until the day you die, and he says on that day you can take off.
That's great. That's great.
How about a couple of really quick questions from a few listeners, if it's all right?
Good.
Deborah asks an interesting question. She's if she's scheduling a seven, in her example, is a 7.5 mile long run, and putting in her run, walk, run during that. But at the beginning of each one of her long runs, she always warms up with a 5-minute walk, and then she cools down with a 10-minute walk at the end.
Yeah.
Does she want to add that into the 7.5 miles or whatever her distance is? She add that in, or is that just, you know what I'm saying, just a warm up and a cool down at the end of her long run?
I get asked that a lot, and basically, and particularly by my e-coach clients.
Mm-hmm.
And the bottom line is, you can do it either way. There really is no answer. If you want to add it to the total, that's good. If you want to just shoot for the assigned amount that is done in the middle, that's also fine. So whatever you want to do is fine.
The last question is actually from something I'm curious about, and we began this discussion with me telling you that the heat index was about 104 outside. And I guess the question is, if I can't get up early, there's really some reason, or I don't, whatever.
Yeah.
Is there ever a time, is there ever a way to tell us when is it really too dangerous to go out and run? The benefits far, are outweighed by the risks.
Those who have cardiovascular issues, have been diagnosed with heart disease or have symptoms of heart disease, should really avoid temperatures that rise above 80, 85 degrees, depending on the individual. That said, there is an adaptation that individuals will get when they get out and gradually get used to hot weather. There are also some other things that I found to keep you cool, and that is to take a 5-minute cold shower break or soak in the pool, a cool pool. And you can insert those 5-minute cool-off breaks every 10, 15, 20 minutes, just depending on how stressed you are by the heat of the day. The reality is that you will not lose any conditioning if you only take off 5 minutes at a time. But you will avoid the continuous heat buildup if you're taking those cool-off breaks often enough.
Perfect. Well, listen, I don't want to keep you anymore. I know you've got some 85 or 80 degree cool weather to get out there and enjoy, and some beautiful scenery there at Lake Tahoe. I've gotten so much information that I need to throw into this episode, and so what I'm going to do is, as I did earlier in another episode, is split this, and this is going to actually be episode 7A. 7B is we're going to expand on this topic, and as I inferred a few minutes ago, we're going to speak with Mr. Chris Crowley. He's the co-author of Younger Next Year. It's a great book, and
it is.
That's another one of my favorites, and it really dovetails nicely into the running until you're 100 topic.
Absolutely.
As well as, we're going to actually have a very motivational speaker on with us, a fellow runner who actually took all of these lifestyle changes that we've been talking about and put it to practice to save his own life. So you will not want to miss that episode. And then we'll follow that up with episode 8, once again, with Jeff, where we're going to get in some really long runs of 20 plus. And I think about this, Jeff, your program is one of the few, if not the only, I think, that actually has us running longer than the 20 seems to be like a maximum for most other programs.
Yes. When I first started advocating 26 miles, no other programs were using that, anything above 20. Now, a few programs have drifted up to 22 or 23, which is obviously better than 20, but unfortunately, you're going to tend to hit the wall at the distance of the last long run within about the last 3 weeks, and I don't want anybody to hit that wall, and the wall is avoidable, so we'll talk about that.
Good. I'd also like to touch a little bit upon some training issues and differences as far as men versus women, if we could.
Good.
And a last topic I think I'd like to talk about is if we do have any listeners out there that are thinking about running for time, just a little bit about what some of your thoughts are on qualifying for Boston.
Great. Love to talk about that.
You can help us qualify, but actually getting into that race might be a problem.
There are two issues. Yeah, one of them is training yourself to get ready and then qualifying, but the second one is very hard also, and that is just entering, and we'll talk about some of that. Sounds
good.
Great.
Perfect. And lastly, in Episode 8, I'm keeping my fingers crossed, but I've got on tap a very, very special guest, and actually a friend of yours, Jeff. You and I haven't even spoken about this, but if that all goes well, I'm very excited about that as well. So
great.
Thanks very much, Jeff, and you enjoy the rest of your week in Lake Tahoe, and we'll touch base in a few weeks.
Okay, Kevin, you've got to come out and join us here one year. Maybe we can do a podcast from here.
I would love to do that. Thanks a lot, Jeff.
Okay, talk to you later.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
So let me ask you this. Is there now any doubt in your mind what we need to do to live longer and better lives? Huh? Well, should we discuss the obesity rates in the United States? Or worldwide, for that matter, something just isn't clicking. But honestly, I think we only have control, at least right now, of our own little world. So if we can help some of this sink in to our own tiny brains and affect change in our own lives and families, it's a start. The Extra Mile Podcast Galloway Edition, Episode 7B, will be posted in a few days. And in the way of full disclosure, will not include a discussion with Jeff. What it will include is an interview with an author by the name of Chris Crowley. Chris is the author of an amazing book that's entitled Younger Next Year. I beg you to get over to the website, check out the link, and order this book. He has also authored a version for women, Younger Next Year for Women, that may be more appropriate for some of you. It's an incredible book related to this topic. It's an easy read. It's funny. I'm a slow reader, and I finished this book in about 2 hours. That was my first time. I've read this book at least 7 or 8 times, as well as given it to friends and family multiple times. If you've listened to nothing else I've said, please take my advice and check this book out. Make sure you head over to the website for details on how to order Jeff's book, Running Until You're 100, at special podcast discount rates over his website. I will put a link in the show notes of today's episode on exactly how to do that. And trust me, it's another Galloway book you need for your library. And lastly, make sure while you're over there at the website, you check out the link to our Facebook page, our Twitter page. Got some fun stuff going on over at our Facebook page. I've given away quite a bit, and I still have a few items to give away before this series of podcasts finishes up. So make sure you get over there and check us out. You'll also see our email address as well as the listener comment line where I would love to hear from you. those of you who are out on a run right now and would like to call, that comment line is area code 206-339-8471. So until episode 7B, y'all enjoy your extra mile.
Thanks for joining us on the Extra Mile Podcast Galloway Edition. Please visit our website at www.thegallowayextramile.com to see the show notes for this episode of the podcast. You can email us with your feedback about the show at thegallowayextramile@gmail.com. If you'd like to send us your audio comments to let us know how your run, walk, run marathon training is going, please send an audio file to thegallowayextramile@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. Thanks very much for downloading the show, and we look forward to joining you again soon on the next edition of the Extra Mile Podcast Galloway Edition. Walk break.
Back, Daddy.